a motion picture called The Ten Commandments. Produced by Cecil DeMille, the well-known producer and director of moving pictures, who has given us so many stupendous motion pictures in the past. Upon this picture, which is nearly 3.5 hours long, the producer seems to have lavished the utmost of his talents and the utmost of the resources of Hollywood in the spectacular. The Ten Commandments, produced on a most elaborate scale. And some of the scenes are fairly breathtaking in their sweep and magnificence. The architectural glories of the pharaohs of ancient Egypt, the wealth of its palaces and its temples, the building of the pyramids and of the fortress cities of the king, to which thousands of Hebrew slaves were driven by the lash of the taskmaster, and the scenes of the Exodus itself, the going out of Egypt, the crossing of the Red Sea, and the waters miraculously part for the crossing of the Hebrews and return again to drown Pharaoh's hosts and chariots. All these scenes are quite astonishing in their magnitude and in their grandeur and leave the viewer fairly breathless. Mr. Cecil DeMille took a few liberties with the biblical text and followed it rather faithfully, except where there are gaps, blank spaces, as it were, in the story of Moses to be filled in. And here, the imagination of the producer, of course, was given free rein. Where there existed some fugitive midrash or some legend found elsewhere in Jewish literature, which served more fully the purpose of a stepped-up version of the life of Moses, that the producer seized upon and made the most of it. It's a remarkable picture in many ways. Personally, I prefer to read the story of the Exodus in the Bible rather than to see it enacted upon the stage or upon the screen. I prefer to let my own imagination play upon that remarkable biblical narrative, even as the imagination of the author of that biblical narrative played upon the episode. I recoil from seeing recorded and concretized realized before my eyes poetic episodes, miracles, mystic experiences that really belong to the inner eye and to the quiet meditations of the devout heart. Just as the author of the account found in the Bible, which I read to you this morning, cautioned the people to remember that they saw no images. Lo ra'item kol tmuna, you saw no pictures. You felt an experience, tremendous, overwhelming, but no pictures, no physical delineations. So I rather feel a more helpful approach to the biblical story is by way of no pictures, but to take that ancient narrative, read it, meditate upon it, look deep into it, and give your own interpretation to it. The Ten Commandments, as portrayed in this picture, is really the life of Moses from birth until death. And the central theme, which is admirably stressed in this picture, is the eternal struggle of men for freedom, freedom from bondage. It is an eloquent indictment of tyranny, of the boundless cruelties, wrongs, which are visited upon men by dictators who say, as Abraham Lincoln said in his day of the slaveholders, they say, you toil and work and earn bread, and I'll eat it. Moses freed a people that had been enslaved for 400 years. And the last dramatic words spoken by Moses in this picture, as he departs for his unknown grave upon Mount Nebo, his last words, which are the key words, are the words taken from the book of Leviticus, chapter 19, and thou shalt proclaim freedom throughout the land unto all the inhabitants thereof. And this, of course, is the supreme theme of the saga of Moses and the emancipation. But there is one other theme in the story, which the motion picture failed to draw attention to, but which the biblical account places second only to the story of the deliverance itself. The Jewish people were set free by God through the instrumentality of Moses, not just to be free, but that it might be free to carry the revelation of the one God and of his moral law to the whole world. It was a freedom which was dowered with a world mission. It was freedom which was linked to a covenant and to a set of tremendous commitments on the part of the people which was set free. And at the foot of Mount Sinai, that covenant was consummated. And the nature of that mission, for which Israel was set free by the mighty hand of God, was explained to the people. The Atem Tiuli, and ye shall become unto me Mamlechet Kohanim, a kingdom of priests, the Goy Kadosh, and a holy people. Now the duty of a priest is to officiate at the high altars of God. And a holy people is one that is dedicated to the task of spreading holiness, of serving the things which contribute to holiness in the life of humanity. Israel was not merely to be free, but to be free to execute a service for God, to become an Eved Adonai, a servant of God. Or as the prophets later defined it, to open the eyes of the blind, to bring forth the prisoner out of the dungeon house. Israel was to become, by virtue of that covenant, by virtue of that liberation, the teacher of God's moral law to the whole world. That is your wisdom and that is your understanding in the sight of all the nations. You may recall from what I read this morning. And the Ten Commandments were given at Mount Sinai, or to be the epitome, if you will, or the foundation stones of that system of law, moral, ethical law, which Israel was to bring to the world. So that the story of Exodus is not simply the story of how a people is redeemed from slavery. That is a great story in itself, of course. But our people, so redeemed, was consecrated to a world mission, which for thousands of years thereafter was to keep it a distinctive people, through whose religious and ethical message and mission to mankind, the spirit of man was to be quickened to new adventures in faith and social aspiration. The Exodus marks the birth of a nation, a unique people. And with the giving of the Ten Commandments to that people, a destiny was prescribed for that people for all future time. This is the second key idea of the story of the Exodus and the giving of the Ten Commandments in the Bible, which the picture failed to draw attention to. And these ethical and spiritual truths which Israel was to bring to the world were revolutionary teachings. They were new. They were startlingly new. In ancient days, and to an extent also, they're new in modern days. Take, for example, when you read the Ten Commandments, you find nothing in them about sacrifices. The Lord did not command Israel to bring, in the Ten Commandments, to bring sacrifices. Now, the bringing of sacrifices was the essential cult feature of every single religion in antiquity. That was religion. To bring sacrifices to the deity, to appease the deity, and so win its favor, and avert evil, and that was it. Religion had no relation whatsoever to man's personal, ethical life and his relationship to his fellow man. Ten Commandments, just to be the basis of Judaism, it says nothing about sacrifices. And the prophets of Israel subsequently called forceful attention to this fact. Thus the prophet Jeremiah says, "Ki lo dibarti et avotichem, I did not speak with your forefathers, The Lo Tzivi team and I did not command them. The Yom Hotzi'i Otam Eretz Mitzrayim, on the day when I brought them out of the land of Egypt. Al Divrei Ola the Zavach, concerning burnt offering and sacrifices. And he based himself on these Ten Commandments. There's nothing there concerning burnt offerings and sacrifices. And the prophet Micah called attention to the same fact. Wherewith shall I come before the Lord and bow myself before God on high? Shall I come before him with burnt offerings? With calves of a year old? Will the Lord be satisfied with thousands of rams, with ten thousands of rivers of oil? Shall I give my firstborn for my transgression, the fruit of my body for the sin of my soul? No. Thou hast been told, O man, what is good and what the Lord doth require of thee, only to do justice and to love mercy and to walk humbly with thy God. These three tremendous ideas, which are of the very core and heart of the Ten Commandments. That's a revolutionary teaching given to mankind. A new definition of religion. God is to be worshipped through justice and righteousness and the good life. When you read the Ten Commandments, you'll find that in the very first two sentences, the whole of Judaism is defined. And in fact, it was these two first commandments which the rabbis said were the ones actually spoken directly by God to all the people around Mount Sinai. The others were given by God through Moses to the people. They sought to draw attention in their way, of course, to the extraordinarily important and essential character of these first two commandments. For they embody really the whole of Judaism. Unity and freedom and compassion. God is one. I am the Lord, your God. This is further elaborated in the next sentence. Thou shalt have no other gods before me. And this ushered in this declaration, which was a challenging and defying declaration against all the religious traditions of the ancient world and practices. This ushered in a millennial and relentless war upon all forms of polytheism, dualism, upon that entire mythological complex of deities and their genealogies and the sex motif in religion, upon all forms of nature worship and their orgiastic and at times obscene rituals. I am the Lord your God. Thou shalt have no other gods before me. And this God is one, and he is spiritual, without any physical form. You saw no form. Lo ra'item kol tmuna. And he therefore cannot be represented by any image. Thou shalt not make unto thyself any graven image of anything that is in the heaven of the earth, or the earth beneath, or the waters under the earth. Thou shalt not bow down to them nor worship them. This challenged the whole ancient world, whose religion was idolatrous. It was the beginning of a relentless war upon all forms of physical representation of divinity. The gods of the ancient were represented either as animals, as was the case with Egypt, or in human form, accompanied by sacred animals or other creature symbols. as was the case in the whole of the Near East, and in the Greek world, and in the Roman world. God is one, and therefore, as a inevitable corollary, all mankind is one, one in God. And here is the fountainhead of all ideals of human brotherhood, of human equality, and of world peace. As long as peoples believe that each tribe or each people or each race had its own God, the world was split into segments. There was no universal brotherhood of men because they were not all the creatures of the one God. They did not all belong to one family. Judaism maintained that as God is one, so is mankind one, and therefore have we not all one Father? Hath not one God created us all? Why then should we deal treacherously one with another? And in these Ten Commandments, and in this very first sentence of the Ten Commandments, there is embodied another of the great revolutionary teachings of Judaism, that God is a God of freedom. He is subject to no power above himself. He is not subject to fate or necessity or destiny, as were the gods of the ancient world. He is all-powerful and therefore free to act and to carry out his purposes in the world. He is not a personification of any force in nature. He is the God of nature, the creator of nature. He is supreme will and supreme mind, and therefore directs the history of men and nations. I am the Lord thy God who brought thee out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of bondage. God works in the history of the human race. The commandment does not read, I am the Lord thy God who created heaven and earth. That was accepted and understood. The new revolutionary idea introduced here is that I am the Lord thy God who brought thee out of the land of Egypt, who took part in your history, who is involved in your struggles and your aspirations. God administers his world. Judaism gave mankind a philosophy of history. Judaism saw in human history no mere succession of events, but the outline of an unfolding moral process, the articulation in time of a divine plan, seen by man dimly, but known to God in its completeness. And man, too, is free within the framework of his humanity. Man's life is not predetermined. Man is not a mere tool in the hands of fate. He is a self-willing and a moral agent. God created a moral universe, and man's freedom is its very hallmark. Human action affects human history, even as it affects the personal life of the individual. And God willed that man should be free. If man could not choose at all, if his conduct was predetermined, there was no point in giving man 10 commandments and hold him responsible for action over which he had no control. God is one, mankind is one. God is free. And man, within the limitations of his humanity, is also free to to create and to fashion and to determine. And God wants men to be economically and politically free. I am the Lord thy God who brought thee out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of bondage. The very law which was given to the Jewish people was not to be a burden upon them or a bondage, but was to help them to become truly free. The rabbis commenting on the words in the Bible, the Ten Commandments were engraved upon the two tablets of stone. Harut is the Hebrew word for engraved. The rabbi said, Al Tikra Harut, call it not, read it not engraved, read it Cherut, freedom, because it is by observing the moral laws of God that man becomes truly free, that man emancipates himself from the chains of his lower self, of his lusts and his low ambitions, and rises to the highest levels of a free human being. And the third principle teaching that you find in the Ten Commandments, already embodied in the first few verses of it, is that God is a God of compassion. I am the Lord thy God who brought thee out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of bondage. When Moses saw the revelation of God in the burning bush, also at Sinai, he heard a voice which said unto him, Ra'u ra'iti, I have seen, et ani ami, the suffering of my people, asher b'mitzrayim, who are in Egypt. Ve'etzakatam shamati, and I have heard their cry, mipnei nukshav, because of their cruel taskmasters. Ki yadati et machuvav, verily, I know their pain and their suffering. And Judaism, if it taught anything, taught mankind to be compassionate. Mahurachum afatarachum. Just as God is compassionate, be thou compassionate. Man must try to understand the suffering of his fellow man, sympathize with him, and help him. Not merely a question of justice, of quid pro quo. It's deeper, far deeper than all that. In a world of universal cruelty and inhumanity, where life was cheap, where life was miserable except for the few at the top, Judaism taught men to open the wells of pity of their hearts. Mercy and compassion are forever to be the distinguishing marks of a true Israelite. What Judaism reached for was a quality of humaneness, a sensitiveness to the hurt of one's fellow human being. A universal kindness. And so, within these three basic teachings of Judaism, unity and freedom and compassion, the remaining Ten Commandments may be fairly grouped. Because God is one and exalted and the ruler of men and nations, he is to be revered. Therefore, no one should take his name in vain. Because God wants man to be free to aspire to higher levels, not to be changed to drudgery all his lifetime, A day of rest was set aside for everybody, master and slave alike. A day which was to become later on, as the prophets called it, a day of delight, not a day of taboo. One of the most significant pieces of social legislation ever given to mankind, whereby a man would have at least one day in seven to abstract himself from his hard labor and devote himself to other things, to mind, to spirit, to his fellow men, to be a human being free, at least for a period of time, to reach up to higher things. Because all men are one in God and brothers, thou shalt not steal from one another, thou shalt not bear false witness against thy neighbor, thou shalt not murder thy neighbor, thou shalt not covet what he has, thou shalt not undermine the sanctity of your neighbor's family life. And because our parents are God's agents in giving us life and love, we should honor them to the utmost. All this put together constitutes a tremendous summary or epitome of Judaism. Now, of course, the Ten Commandments do not exhaust all the laws of Judaism. They were not intended to. In fact, chapter 20 of the book of Exodus, which contains the Ten Commandments, is immediately followed by chapter 21, which begins, Ve'ele ha-mishpatim asher tasim lifneihem. And these are the additional laws which thou shalt put before them. And the five books of ascribed to Moses, there are many other laws which are not included in the Ten Commandments. If you read, for example, that perfectly magnificent 19th chapter of the book of Leviticus, which begins with the phrase, ye shall be holy, for I, the Lord your God, am holy, you will find the laws of Judaism concerning charity, which are not found in the Ten Commandments. The giving of tithes to the poor, the sharing of your harvest with the needy, the law not to lie, not to hate thy brother in thy heart, not to take vengeance, not to pervert justice, love thy neighbor as thyself, to revere the aged, not to oppress the stranger, just balances and just weights, and many other of the tremendous ethical teachings of Judaism. They are found elsewhere in the Bible. The Ten Commandments are the foundations of the building. The foundations are important to the structure, but they're not the whole structure. And I should like to conclude with these two observations about the Ten Commandments. In the first place, they are written and addressed to the individual. Second person, thou. Thou shalt not. Thou shalt. Spoken directly to each and every individual. And that is a significant thing. For the individual is very important, and in a sense equivalent to the whole people. And social reform must begin with personal reform. The center of gravity in the moral life is placed in Judaism where it belongs, in the individual. No one should say, said the rabbi. Because I am king, or because I am a priest, or because I am very rich and powerful, these commandments do not apply to me. They were not meant for me. Daya la Torah shetit kayem al yedei acherim. Let the Torah be fulfilled by others. I am exempt. I am above the law. No, thou shalt. Thou shalt not. Imi hadibur medaber. The commandments addressed directly to me, to everyone. That, my good friends, is the tremendous moral teaching which has come down now for more than 3,000 years, and which in the year 1956 is still so pertinent, so relevant, so challenging, so exciting, that it still inspires poets and writers and artists, moving picture producers, to retell the story of the 10 words spoken at Mount Sinai. Afoch bo ve'afoch bo dekule bo. Turn it around and around, for everything is really in it.